Welcome back to Untangled, the compliance podcast, simplifying compliance complexities. With me today are Stephanie, Andre and Alex on the boat pod in central London. So, we've all written our policies. We need to train our teams and on how to apply them in their roles. But how do we know if our training is any good? Now, clearly, people falling asleep in a training session is a good indicator that we may have missed the mark. But Andre, what can we measure to see whether our training is effective?
I think you have to change a bit of a perception there, right? Because I think everyone assumes compliance training is boring and dull and no one really cares. But I think in the reality, it actually adds a lot of value to the organization because it addresses those areas where people need to have some information how to do their job in a way that either aligns with the company policies or doesn't create unnecessary risk. So I think we are being compliance managers and sometimes being so much ingrained in the content creation and delivery, we sometimes become a bit skeptical and pessimistic about how much value it actually adds. And that's to me one of the first pulse checks I would always recommend to do on the compliance training, whether it's an annual review or after your presentation or lunch on session or whatever you do, is to gather feedback, right? Get the feedback from the audience. How do they feel about it? Did they like it? Do that anonymously. Do that, you know, a week after through some form of a survey. And that should help you understand whether the message on compliance training or the method of delivery actually hits the mark, right? Because if we talk about any training, compliance training being what we do, you usually have to get a few things right, content and method of delivery being one of them. Once that gets solved and once people appreciate the value and content, then you pretty much nail the problem. But I think that's where the biggest challenge with the current compliance training setup. It's the content or method is very, very old school, so to say.
So I was just having a thought about, and I'm sure Alex will inform us in a minute whose model or theory this is. But in compliance training, when we're trying to move people from unconscious incompetence to conscious competence, I don't remember whose model that is, but it's basically a journey that you move on from people don't know what they don't know. And we obviously also at that point don't know what they don't know. And we're trying to move them to a point where they know what to do, but also, you know, if they know that they don't know something, how to find out. So just thinking of a recent example that we've used to try and address some of this is on a topic that we've been rolling out about the use of social media. We did a sort of two-part training, and this is an optional training that we're running at the moment, but the first part is a quiz. And so the quiz is just, can you answer these questions about what you are and are not allowed to do on social media? And at the beginning of the quiz, we ask them the question, how confident are you that you know what you can and can't do on social media? You know, scale of 1 to 10. And at the end of the quiz, we ask them the same question. And what was interesting to find is whilst the vast majority of people moved up that scale, it gave them confidence, we had a subset of people who moved down the scale. At the beginning of the quiz, they thought they knew what they should do. And then they realized when they got the answers to the quiz wrong, they didn't know what they should do. So what that gave us, because of, and it wasn't anonymous because it's done within the system, within the function we get an email of people moving down that scale, it gives us an opportunity to reach out to them and say, how can we help you? You know, what was it that you became less confident about? And also then that links them through to the actual training content. So if they've gone from, I was really confident, I was an 8 out of 10, now I'm a 4 out of 10, then one would hope, and certainly within the culture that we're trying to encourage, is that would drive them to say, I think I need to do this training because I don't want to be a level 4. I want to be back up at a level 8 or a 9. So it's a good way of helping to understand that and move that unconscious incompetence into conscious incompetence. And then the training, hopefully, ultimately moves them towards conscious competence.
I've seen another variation of that data and impact where one of the trainings on, I think it was cyber awareness or cybersecurity awareness, was actually pushed with a dashboard of leaders' dashboard as to people who've got the questions right or wrong, And it had not just mandatory modules that everyone had to do and being ranked on that. It actually had optional content. And because many people in the commercial organization are quite competitive, they started signing up and voluntarily doing those optional modules and trying to compete for being on a leaderboard just for fun. And I think that actually created a quite a traction on getting a training awareness and buy-in that wasn't perhaps originally anticipated.
And having gone through similar training at my place as well recently, what the team then followed up with were fake emails, and you had to report it as phishing. You may have seen this. And then if you get it correct, a pop-up or incorrect, a pop-up will say, you know, and give you feedback. So again, that reinforcing the training and challenging you to put it into practice in a safe environment. That's another way to embed the training. And going back to the model, of course, that model was from the management trainer, Martin M. Broadwell, who first taught it in 1969 in February, I believe. And that in no way has anything to do with the fact I have Wikipedia open on my phone.
Of course.
The other model I was aware of, I've mentioned it on a previous show, I think, was the Kirkpatrick's four levels of training evaluation.
Oh, yes, the Star Trek model.
The Star Trek one, exactly. So, you know, again, I won't repeat it, but you have those different levels of training evaluation, starting with the very emotional, going all the way through to putting into practice and demonstrating, which sounds like that's where the cyber team went in my organization.
See, that's where the intrigue is. If you are really curious, you know, to go back and find that episode where Alex mentioned this, right? That's what you can do on your compliance training curricula as well. Make sure it's cross-reference and cross-link so people are there on a journey. They are not just sitting through one module listening and moving on to their day jobs. Make sure that your training plan has a story, right, and storyline where you would be interested to follow that journey, right? One of the things I've seen in my practice is when the compliance training was built as a cartoon, and it had a bit of, I think, 6 or 10 episodes of a journey of a cartoon style character through various challenges. It was a bit childish.
I was going to say, it's not Dilbert.
No, not Dilbert, but yeah, it's on the management thing as well. And I think it helped people to stay engaged because it was, at that point in time, definitely unconventional. It was interesting, and it also made people even talk about that and talk the story and journey of that character from one episode to another. And from my perspective, it was very impactful because if people continue talking about your compliance training after the fact, once the session is over, they clearly remember the message.
So I think some really great examples there about how to drive engagement with the training. But if we accept at least part of the premise that compliance training is designed to change behavior within your organization, generally speaking, are knowledge checks useful? And if they are, when should we do them?
Well, yeah, I mean that's almost what the phishing example that I gave is. It's almost a knowledge check. Now, you could do that maybe, and we have done in the past, where you send emails every 2 weeks or 3 weeks with a question that people can then answer. And I know other groups can then score. And I think, Andre, you were saying about having some kind of competition element to it as well. But certainly, you know, again, ironically, saying repetition, which is something I'm repeating from the previous podcast as well, because that's the stickiness element.
And on this point, what I would also suggest to the audience to consider is to see how you can build compliance spot checks or compliance-related topics into other quizzes or knowledge tests that are happening within the organization, right? Because one of the projects I've been involved in a while ago is there was a knowledge check for Salesforce, and they were tested on the knowledge of the product, on the knowledge of the therapeutic areas we were working in, and things like that. And what we managed to agree with the business excellence function is that we've built 10 or 20 compliance related questions as to company policies and standards into that quiz. So for sales reps, they were not doing a compliance test, the compliance quiz, they were doing their business excellence effectiveness exercise, and between 10 questions, 9 of them were on the product and other more business focused things. One question was about their knowledge of compliance standards. And I think, again, it helps to to deliver the message in a better way, but it also helps you then to get the data, how effective it is and whether people still remember and appreciate the content you were delivering before. So I would definitely say there is a value, but you need to find the right method so it doesn't feel intrusive or isolated.
Yeah, and I think you make a good point there as well by building it into the other sort of knowledge checks or testing around their role. It also becomes embedded. So it means that the compliance element is meaningful and relevant to them because it is then about practical application. So if you ask the question about whether knowledge tests are useful, my answer would be they can be. They are often not. So, I mean, I often find, you know, they become a bit of an afterthought in the rollout of some form of training and then become just a memory test of what you've just read. And then often not even the most pertinent question. So for me, a knowledge check should be about application, not about memory. You don't need people to remember the lines of a policy. I mean, obviously you'd want them to remember fundamental principles like, well, you know, we don't bribe people. I wouldn't want them to have to go and check a policy for that. But you don't want them to have to remember that section 5.1 says they have to fill in this form and send it to this person. What you want is to be able to check that they know that there is a process they need to follow. They know where to find it. They know what the relevant bits are to them. So it's about building a knowledge check that is meaningful for the person in the application of that knowledge, not just a memory check.
And I think it very much depends on the nature of the information or what you're trying, the behavior that you're trying to change. You know, is it helping someone remember a meal limit or a gift, you know, limit that people can buy or not? Or is it an ethical dilemma? Now, an ethical dilemma is going to be much harder to just do a knowledge check on because we all know the right answers most of the time, you know, through a test, a multiple choice test. We all know the right answers for those. It's how you can role play someone actually being in that situation in a safe environment. That's much, much harder. And I'm not sure I have the answer for that. I don't think a knowledge check would actually help with the ethical dilemma. It may help with, you know, simple information.
I mean, I think one possibility and something that we're looking at the moment, we've not done it yet. I'm a bit older than you guys, so you may not remember these. But when I was a kid, we used to have these books that were like adventure books.
Choose Your Own Adventure.
Yeah, okay. I'm not that old then. Or maybe you're old too. But essentially, you would go through the book and on a certain page, it would be roll a dice to take an action, etc. And so we're looking at the possibility of that almost like Choose Your Own Adventure knowledge check in training. So you have options, but it's not a simple right, wrong answer. It's like you could take various actions and those actions could lead to further consequences and where does it ultimately take you. So you're taking somebody on the journey of that role play, but in a way where if they make different decisions and they're not black and white, really, you know, it's not, you know, do you give that envelope of cash to somebody, but things that are just, you know, different options, what might they lead to help with that kind of learning and embedding of the principles.
And that's when it can be very useful in helping that branching of different scenarios and how things play out. I suppose even then it's really hard to get the emotional side of being in that situation, and you'd almost need actors and a kind of, you know, role play to be able to do that.
But that's where sort of reflecting on the earlier discussion about technology, right, and how the modern environment can help. I was looking at the market of compliance training and options that's currently there in the last 6 months or so. And there are actually quite a few new providers that offer exactly that, right? But it's digital, it's modern, it's actually very easy to customize because they have 10 different scenarios that every company can accommodate to their needs and priorities. And that gives control and engagement of the user into the training, not just in terms of understanding what the question is and how to answer it on the A, B, or C, or D. It gives them an option to choose the behavior journey or an action from a theoretical scenario that takes them through that pathway. And I think it's the technology is there, making it useful and making it relevant for your program. It's down to you guys.
So some really good tips again there, guys. And just before we wrap up, quick one from each of you. Give me something that's a good indicator that the training has actually changed behaviours.
Nothing like putting us on the spot there, Jim. I mean, for me, I'm not sure it's is easy to distill that down into one simple thing, but I think you should connect it with your monitoring program. So what are you seeing people do in as far as the policy application is concerned? And does that link to the training that you've sent out? And I think the whole point about a compliance program is it should be this kind of holistic, you know, a thing. No one pillar is independent from the other. It should not be siloed. So can you connect that training with your monitoring? And then you should be able to see whether or not you're impacting the behavior.
Yeah, and a bit of the same avenue for me, it was always the feedback. And I always tasked the effectiveness of the training just looking at the spike of activity immediately after that, because there is always a natural spike, whether people come with more questions or they send their feedback or they give you comments. And sometimes when you've done the training about, I know, certain limits, suddenly you would have a few phone calls from people saying, well, we either have done it, feels wrong now, how we manage that, or you will have a phone call saying, well, I'm now facing this situation. I remember you mentioned it's sensitive, so can you help me through that? So to me, that's where you got an appreciation that the message has reached the audience, and whether it is on scale, whether it covers the whole organization, that's the effectiveness measurement you need some time to trace.
And for me, it all starts with, you know, the good effectiveness starts with good learning objectives. So you have to know what it is that you want the outcome to be from that training and intervention. It has to be clear. Can't just be understand X, Y, Z. It has to be in some way actionable. And in that way, once you've set those good learning objectives, you're on the right path to be able to then measure it at the very end.
Fantastic. And obviously being the data-driven one of the team, obviously a spike in activity on your online information repositories is also a good indicator that people are actually engaged in what you're talking about. Fantastic. Excellent. Well, some really good tips here. And I'm just going to summarize, if I can, a couple that I'm certainly going to be taking away. With your learning programs, make sure you've got very clear objectives. We ended with that from Alex, but I think obviously that comes front and center when you're looking at your training. Build engaging content. I think Andre made the point that it's assumed to be boring. It doesn't have to be. There may be concerns about trivializing some of the content, but that doesn't mean we can't make it fun and engaging. We want people to talk about it afterwards. We know that teaching other people about what we've learned actually is a good way to cement that knowledge. So if people are going around talking about it, that's a real positive. Quizzes, they work, but if done correctly, particularly if they're embedded in other functional training activities that aren't compliance with a big C. And cross-reference between trainings to drive people to the other training materials that you've provided. It just continues that journey of self-learning, self-improvement, which is exactly what we want to achieve. So that's it. Thank you very much, guys. Thank you for listening. As always, if you have an idea of things you'd like to listen to, please drop us a note on LinkedIn. Let us know what you're interested in hearing more about. Otherwise, see you on the next episode.